I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Hello, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings of the Cats and Jammer Follies on The Voice of Vashon, a travel story show. And today we have the lovely Andy Aldridge, and she has a travel tour company called Travel in Italia, and her podcast is Italy Inside Out. Andy, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your tours and your podcast, please?
Sure. I've lived on this island for more than 40 years, so I'm almost an old timer.
That's such a funny Vashon thing that people love to talk about.
At least I know where the Jesus Barn used to be and where Youngest Corner is, so that's good.
Where are you originally from?
I'm from Southern California. Nice. And I met my husband when he just got out of the Army in Southern California and followed him to the Northwest. And I've been so happy to be here ever since.
Yeah, I love it's pretty it here. Beautiful.
Yeah. And I started traveling probably more heavily about 20 years ago, and it developed into a travel business, specifically in Italy. Started out doing itineraries for my friends, and then it developed into an actual tour guide service.
How many tours a year do you usually do?
I do about 4 a year, probably 2 in the fall and 2 in the spring. Not this year, however, well, but most years, yes. Yeah.
So Andy is somebody who I've known for many years, and we both share this love of Italy very much. And as per a recommendation, she went to Sardinia, into the town where Adam and I love to go to, called Cagliari on the west coast. It's near the city of Boza and Oristano. And today she's going to tell us a story that she wrote. Not that you wrote it when you were there, but it is about this small city. I think there's like 3,000 people in this,
very in this small.
Town.
It's very, very sweet small. Town.
But it's a mountaintop town, and the very top of the hill is the main church, and it's called Santa Maria della Neve. And the whole reason that Adam and I ever was interested in this town was, I mean, for many reasons, but how I really discovered it was because we had a dog named Neve who passed away last November, and he was a beloved creature that we had for a million years, 14, which is pretty old for a border collie. And it was probably 8 years ago when I saw this basilica at the top with the name Santa Maria della Neve, which means, you know, of the snow, which is rare for Sardinia because it's not a place where it really snows. But that's what brought us there, and Andy loves that town as well now, so I'm happy about that, that we share that. Andy, please tell us your story.
Okay. So this is about the festival of Santa Caterina, and it happens every year, of course, in the town of Cagliari. Daylight was just breaking on this May morning when I climbed the narrow street to the Basilica of Santa Maria della Neve in Cagliari, Sardinia. The sun reached over the mountains behind the church, looking for the Mediterranean Sea below, but found instead a blanket of fog hiding the water. For days I had seen the posters displayed in the windows and shops of the offices in Cagliari, announcing the festival of Santa Caterina. I was excited to see one of these enigmatic southern Italian festivals, albeit modest in size compared to the extravagant displays held during the week of Easter in many of the towns of Sicily and Calabria. I am not sure why I am so drawn to these religious Italian pageants. Perhaps it is because I was raised an Episcopalian, the Church of England, stiff upper lip and all that, with none of the flamboyance of the Roman Catholic traditions, well mixed with pagan influences. For years, I had seen pictures and videos and read descriptions of these events, but my plans to actually attend one always fell apart. I arrived at the church to see two beautifully decorated bue, or oxen, their lustrous, carefully groomed coats gleaming in the early morning sun. These obviously well-fed animals wore beautiful headdresses of red roses and white calla lilies. And at their side were men dressed in crisp white shirts and black trousers. The small white carriage that these oxen were to pull was gilded in gold and reminded me of a miniature coast in which a diminutive Cinderella might ride. A short service honoring the saint was held inside the basilica, after which her statue, nestled inside a flower-filled glass case of white and gold, was carried out of the church and placed onto the matching carriage. All was ready for the procession to begin. By now, most of the town had gathered in the square in front of the church. Many were dressed in traditional costumes. There were banners and priests, women in long black and brown dresses in a lustrous embroidered fabric, with white bodices and matching headwear. The men walking with these women were dressed in black trousers with white stockings and distinctive black caps. Some of the men were dressed in white robes with red sashes. The townspeople, not dressed in costume, wore clothes suitable for the long walk ahead and followed at the end of the procession. As the entourage made its way slowly through the village, the bells worn by the oxen announced its progress. I followed along, ducking in and out of streets and piazzas, taking pictures and videos, trying not to be too obvious or intrusive. This clearly was an important and somewhat solemn occasion for the citizens. I got separated and then met up with them again at the crossroads, where a group of riders dressed in costumes and astride slender sardo horses joined the procession as it continued the 12 kilometers to the town of Santa Catarina in Pitunuri. I followed along to the edge of the town, tempted to continue, but it was Sunday, and there were no buses running, and I would not have a way back to Cagliari. So I watched the procession slowly make its way downhill. I could see the gilded case holding the statue of Santa Catarina gently rocking up as the oxen carried the carriage and led the way. I stood there until they were out of sight. I was to learn that the trip takes 3 hours and that there are numerous stops for glasses of wine and local snacks provided by the farmers along the way. The next day, my friend Carla and I were in the village of Santa Catarina in Pitunuri, spending a few hours at the beautiful beach, swimming in the clear, warm waters. As we were waiting for the bus back to Cagliari, we were surprised to see the same procession coming down the hill from the town center and beginning the trip back to restore the statue to the basilica. I learned that when arriving the day before, the procession had circled the tiny church of Santa Caterina di Alessandria 3 times. In the past, those participating would spend the night, but now friends and relatives supply transportation back to their homes before they return the next day to duplicate this thrice-repeated walk around the little church and the trek back to Cagliari. We were amazed that this large group of citizens with many elderly people were going to walk uphill 12 kilometers in the heat of the day. As our bus passed along the same route, we were glad to see many tables under canopies set up with cold water and nourishment to administer to the walkers along their journey. We were told that the procession would finish after dark at the small church of Santa Croce in Cagliari for a blessing and the official end to the pilgrimage. We waited expectantly for the procession to arrive. Eventually, we heard the bells of the oxen and the hooves of the horses on the pavement, and then the carriage came into view with the statue of Santa Catarina glowing in the darkness inside a now lighted case. When all were gathered in front of the church, words were spoken by the priest, and then the townspeople combined their voices in a song to honor their saint. Most appeared weary, but contented after their long walk. Standing on the fringes of the gathering, I felt a mix of emotions. It was very moving to observe the intensity and the reverence with which these citizens obviously felt for this important tradition. As we made our way through the dark lanes on our way back to the little stone house where we were staying while in Sardinia, I thought about the 2 days of celebration that I had just witnessed. I had been taken by the colors and the sounds and impressed by the dedication of the people for their beloved saint. I had definitely been impacted by what I had seen. I wondered what it was like to experience one of the large Easter festivals in southern Italy. I needed to find out.
Ho sbagliato tante volte ormai che lo so già. E oggi quasi certamente sto sbagliando su di te. Ma una volta in più che cosa può cambiare nella vita mia? Accettare questo strano appuntamento è stata una pazzia. Sono triste tra la gente che mi sta passando accanto. Ma la nostalgia di rivedere te forte più del pianto. Questo sole accende sul mio volto un segno di speranza. Sto aspettando quando a un tratto ti vedrò spuntare in lontananza. Amore, fai presto, io non resisto. Non esisto, non esisto.
Andy, that was such a beautiful, beautiful descriptive story of one of these festivals. I have to say, I have been privy not to be at that one, which I would love to be one day, I hope to, but I have been to the Easter festival in Culiri. And I think that I have seen those very same oxen. It's an interesting thing. They will walk the oxen through the streets. I imagine they do it in most towns, but I only just know it of this town of Culiri, probably for about 2 weeks before any of the events to get them used to seeing people. And they have them, which I think you described, sort of, there's two of them and they're held together by a piece of wood. It's kind of like a wooden plank that just sort of keeps them in place. And there's like one guy and he walks them through all the streets. It's, well, as somebody who totally loves animals, every time I see it, I cringe, of course. But then once the event actually starts, it is really beautiful to see them, and they have an amazing presence.
Yeah. I guess they have special treatment there. They're raised or they're kept just outside the town on the other side of the mountain. We saw them once when we were driving over the hill.
For those of you that don't know this area, Santa Caterina is the closest beach to the town of Culiri, and it's basically where everybody goes to, and it's beautiful. And then the town just south of that is called Sarquitu, and it has this beautiful arch in the sea that people like all summer long will jump off of into the Mediterranean, and it's really beautiful.
Have you?
I have not. But I will. But speaking of these processions, no, I haven't, but Adam has. I'm a chicken when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm terrified to injure my body more than I already have in this life. But for Easter, you talked about that you want to see a procession somewhere in southern Italy for Easter, because it's one of the biggest holidays ever. I think it's bigger than Christmas, really. And I got to be there in Culiri for the Easter procession. And I want to say it's for sure a week, if it's not longer. And the main objective is that there are 7 main churches that are in the town. And then there's the giant basilica, again, like I said, that is at the very top of the hill. And what they do is they take, each church has a pretty large life-size Madonna, and they're all painted different colors to represent each church. And so they will take them and they will have this huge procession where people are singing and chanting. And it's just so beautiful. And the streets are lit with candles. And all of these Madonnas and these people make their way up to the main church. And then there's a huge mass. And it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it's incredibly haunting.
I would love to be there next year. Well, maybe not next year. Year after.
No, you could do it next year. Well, I'm hoping anyway. I'm hoping we can get out of here in January.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. Speaking of January, my next story, which I'm going to read, takes place in January of 1991. January of 1991, I had been living in Milan, a city where I'd spent so much of my teenage youth. That winter, a girlfriend of mine that I grew up with in Chicago came out for a visit. Her father had come from Zagreb, and as the world climate was right in 1991 to visit an Eastern Bloc country, we wanted to go. The Eastern Bloc was finally opening up to the world. We took a morning train from Milan to Venice, where we would have the day. These were the old trains of another Italy, an economically depressed Italy, but the charm of these carrozza, as the cabins were called, always get me. They had rustic compartments that would separate passengers from each other. They sat about 6 to 8 people, 6 Americans or 8 Italians, depending on the size. The seats, made of a fake maroon leather, would stretch out to a makeshift bed if needed at night. You could close the curtains, smoke your cigarettes, and listen to the hum of the train, and watch the countryside of Lombardia roll past. The flatlands of the regions were dotted with Lombardy poplar, hence the name, and expansive old farmhouses. If you weren't lucky enough to get to be in one of these compartments, there were folding chairs in the hallways where people would sit, but mostly you would stand, with your head and arms out the windows, again smoking. These seats were not desired, as you would have to get up with every person who would walk through the corridor. These trains were from the 1960s, I believe. Italy is all grown up now, with sleek trains in the north that commuters with fancy pullovers and fine leather shoes use. On another trip to Bulgaria, many decades later, I would joyfully reunite with these old trains, much to my surprise. The brown, maroon carrozza spelled out on every car. It was like seeing an old, long-lost friend who you hadn't seen in ages, but when you do, the feeling of love is mutual. This old friend had brought me up and down and all around the boot of Italy, and I was forever grateful. On this particular trip, it left us in Venice after 3 hours. It was a particularly good Venetian day. The rain was falling so hard and steady, causing the canals to flood. I waded through the canal water knee-deep as we hurried back to the station to catch the night train to Zagreb. This would be my first and only trip to Croatia. I think of it often, returning in my mind to see it how it would be now. I hear tales of how it feels like the rest of Western Europe, and I secretly pine for that harsh tone that communism left, for the gray, wet skies and camaraderie of a single society. We arrived into the city about 4 a.m., into a dimly lit station, people standing around the periphery, Roma people. Widows dressed in black with old scarves pulled tightly around their worn faces of a place that had been closed off for so many years under the dictatorship of Tito. We had befriended 2 Croatian girls on the train who spoke English. They were tired and wanted to go home, but mustered up the energy to show us around for a few hours. The food car of the train hadn't been open, and we didn't come prepared, so by the time we got there, food was of the highest priority. They took us to an all-night burek stand. I quickly devoured the oily layers of phyllo dough, which housed a sort of salty farmer's cheese. It was like heaven. After this, we would say our goodbyes as they dropped us off at a bar that was still open. We walked in, and like in a film, everyone stopped for a split second to see who was coming in, then resumed drinking and conversing. The air was thick with smoke, something I really enjoyed at this time in my life. We stayed there until the time seemed appropriate to meet my friend's family for the first time. I would soon learn the everyday realities of living in an Eastern Bloc country, and now the steps of living without the security of it. Jobs lost, housing lost, open free markets for anyone willing. The mob quickly moved in and has stayed strong in many of the former communist countries who are simply looking for freedom. But that always comes with a cost. We spent most days riding on the electric wood trams that traversed the city, watching the drops of rain shift across the windows and the rock and movement of the start and stop. I found a cafe that I fell in love with. It was in the main square of the town, with floor-to-ceiling windows, a dusty pink velvet couch, and wooded worn tables. "This is where the artists and poets congregate," they said. "I have a vision in my head of this one man, a poet," he said. He wore a dark-colored suit and was in need of a shave and more to drink. He took us into his circle and philosophies about life. I watched him and his delicate fingers hold his cigarette and small glass of red wine. The smoke twirled around him and he intrigued me. Still does. In these paths of travel and movement in the world, I wonder where are these people I've danced around with for a minute in time. But in that moment, it's the most important moment in time. And there is a strong connection, if only for that day. And then you leave, or they leave, and you'll never see them again. It's like this crazy understanding between the two parties of so many that travel. The Yugoslavian border would close a few months after we left, and they would begin their civil war for many years to follow. Just like that, I would never go back to Zagreb in the physical form, but have so many times. I tried to return a few years back, made it back to Venice for my birthday. I even had a reservation with an Airbnb, but then I got sick, really, really sick with bronchitis, and never left the foggy, dewy canals and vias lit by the twinkle bulbs of Christmas. I will try again and again.
Andrea si è perso, si è perso, si è perso, e non sa tornare. Andrea si è perso, si è perso, si è perso, e non sa tornare. Andrea aveva un amore riccio e nero. Andrea aveva un dolore riccio e nero.
That song that was just airing is one of my favorite absolute songs by a guy named Fabrizio De André. And the song is called Andreas. It really should have gone with our friend Andy here's piece, but I selfishly took it for my own. Andy, will you talk a little bit more about your podcast, Italy Inside Out?
Sure. It came about because I was not able to travel to Italy this year. And I knew that there are many other people who wanted to go back to Italy or visit for the first time. And I wanted to have some way to connect with my favorite European country, Italy, and to let people explore some lesser traveled places and experiences in Italy. So I'm having people on from the U.S., but also many guests are Italians, and we're connecting to their hometowns in Italy. So it's fun, and I hope everyone...
They're Italians that are living here, you mean?
No, they're Italians living in Italy.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the interviews are from Italy.
Oh, you record them.
I'm recording them, and they're in Italy.
Okay, I see.
Of course, I have to wake up early in the morning, and they're just about ready to go to bed, but we make it work.
There's always that. Yeah. It's funny, because like during this time of quarantine, you can't obviously go see anybody, we do these FaceTime videos with our two friends of ours that are in that town. And it's really funny because we'll do it in the morning and we'll be having coffee and they'll be like drinking wine. Yeah. And it's like always the main thing that we talk about. I'm like, oh, good morning.
Exactly. I'm having a cappuccino and my guest is having an aperitivo. So
yeah, hopefully it's a good one. What is so I know that people ask you this a lot because you have a tour company, but what is like one of your favorite regions or one of your favorite places to bring your people that come? It was the year before. We got to meet Andy in Sardinia and we got to meet her, I think it was three women.
Yeah, three women on my tour. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had so much
fun. That was a blast. We were actually in Cuyahy.
Yeah.
That's a fun little story. Should I tell it? That little story?
Yeah, do it.
So the woman whose bed and breakfast we rented is named Paola. And Megan knows her. And she has a little farm and she was going to have dinner for my group on the farm. And then she said, you know, it's going to be easier if we do it on my terrace in town. So she made this wonderful dinner and she knew that Megan and Adam were in town. So she invited them and she invited some French friends, because there are a lot of French people living in Cuyahy.
And Russians.
Yes. And so, and then she saw her friends over on the rooftop at their apartment and hailed them over. So it was quite, it was quite an international party and we all had a lot to drink and eat. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, probably more I remember waking up the next day not feeling so good, but she's an interesting person. She was a writer for magazines and papers during a lot of the Cold War and lived in Moscow. So yeah, she has a lot of Russians and Russian friends, rather, that she's then invited to this town of Cuyahy. So there's like this French contingency. Adam and I are like the only kind of Americans that hang out there. And then Andy, but there's like all these like fun loving Russians that are there too. So these dinner parties is one of my favorite things. Adam loves to quote her as saying, one night during one of these parties, not that one, but a different one, when she said, "What language should we speak tonight?"
I know.
And we all just started laughing. I was like, "Well, I hope it's." Well, I was like, "It could be Italian, but like, please don't do it in Russian."
I know. I feel like you have to be multilingual.
You really do.
Especially French.
Oh my God, they're fun times.
It's a beautiful town.
It is a beautiful town. This show also was something I wanted to do for a while, but then during COVID times, I thought, well, this would be a perfect time to start it. So we're like-minded in that.
Yes, so exactly.
I look forward to listening to your show.
And to answer your question, where do I like, what place I like the best? It's wherever I am at the time in Italy. I mean, I've been asked that question many times, but I can't just pinpoint one place. Yeah,
I can't either. I love them all. I love the whole place. Well, there might be a couple places I'm not so keen on, but you know. Andy, I want to thank you so much for coming on and writing a beautiful story and sharing it with all of us. And I hope that I get to spend more time with you in Sardinia.
Oh, me too. Thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shefferville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Coast, Arrival, Pittsfield, Springfield.
Thank you so much for listening. This is Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies, a travel story show on Voice of Vashon. I'd like to thank Voice of Vashon and particularly Jeff Hoyt for making this happen for me. Thank you, guys. See you next week.
I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado.